This is the Wheeler Centre podcast.
This is Art of the Edit with Hrishikesh Away. My name's Miyuki Okiranta, and I would like to start by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land, the Kulin Nation. I pay my respects to the elders past and present and any future generations to come. Also, any other elder communities in here, I pay my respects to you. So, basically, the chances are that you've never noticed that at the end of an Iggy Pop song, Valhalla, there's a slight rustle, and turns out that's where he's getting up out of the chair. Or maybe Shirley Manson and in Garbage, actually directly stealing from Susie and the Banshees. Or Chet Faker, who records apparently singing memos in his sleep. So tonight, in the wise words of The Art of the Noise, that seminal synth-pop band, we're getting close to the edit and diving into the hugely popular podcast Song Exploder. Song Exploder began in 2014 and since then has unpacked about 74 songs and counting. And for those who haven't heard it, each podcast takes one song, breaks it down into jigsaw pieces, be they rhythms, melodies, samples, the inspirations behind podcasts, and then puts that jigsaw back together and plays the song in its final form. The show's creator and host is Hrishikesh Away, and musician himself who goes by V1AM Radio. He's a chronic remixer of the indie Illuminati, and he's also a film score composer, so if ever there was a man for the job. He recently exploded Hiatus Coyote in front of the Vivid audience in Sydney, and there's some unconfirmed rumours about a mega group on the horizon. So please welcome the man that usually edits himself out of the podcast, Song Exploder host, Hrishikesh Away.
Thanks. It's a lot of people here. Thank you guys for coming.
So I've got to ask, was it professional curiosity that first started Song Exploder? What was that first impulse, that nugget that said, right, this is something I want to do?
I think it came a little bit out of, I guess it wasn't one precise moment so much as years of making music and working on a track and hearing how it sounds when you have like one layer that's perfect, you know, just you have the string section and you've mixed it and balanced it and everything's great, and then you proceed to then bury it within the full song and knowing that nobody's ever going to hear that part of your labor. Nobody's ever going to know all that went into it and all the crazy things that you had to do to try and get the sounds right. And then sometimes when I would do remixes for other people, getting the chance to hear their isolated tracks and realizing like how much beauty and work must have gone into those parts and trying to find a format that would allow people to talk about those little pieces and little decisions that went into making a song.
So we have artists from Björk to Ghostface Killah, huge range of genres that all seem to, you know, that really speaks, I suppose, to your broad breadth and appreciation of music. But is there something specific that draws you to the artist? Do you know that there's a great story behind the song?
No, I mean, I wish I knew. That would be great. But it's up to me to try and figure out who might be interesting. Mm-hmm. There's a line in The West Wing.
We'll get to that. Don't worry, I'm on it.
That's also in the musical Hamilton, yep. Where that's quoted in Hamilton, where Sam Seaborn says he's looking for a mind at work.
Yep.
And I think that's sort of my best compass for trying to find something to talk about on Song Exploder. I'm looking for a mind at work behind some aspect of a song, whether it's lyrically or musically or both. But a lot of times, it's surprising. You know, you might get a lot from a song that seems simple on the surface, and you know there are songs that are musically very complex, and trying to pull a good story out of it might be difficult. Mm-hmm. Although that's where editing comes into play.
Yeah, we'll get to that too. So as I said, the genres indie rock, pop, but there are some genres that you don't cover. For instance, jazz. You know, so is it about the studio production element, or are we just seeing the first 74 are just the taster?
Yeah, it's just me getting established. Yeah. There is an episode with a jazz artist that is coming up. It just hasn't happened yet. Mm-hmm. I think part of it is I'm limited a little bit by my own experience and my own background. So the people who are closest to the world that I inhabit are the easiest ones for me to get to. And I'm just a few degrees away from jazz. And so trying to get an artist as significant as Björk in the world of jazz, who'd also be willing to tell a story and have a good story, it's a tricky hill to climb.
We should, I'm sure it's been outed for anyone that follows your conversations closely, the reason that the first person you spoke to was, he's part of your cabal, basically your inner sanctum. So, I mean, basically you're able to get such a big name because he was one of your mates.
Yeah, Jimmy Tamborello from the Postal Service.
Yeah.
Yeah, he and I had, we did like a U.S. tour together a couple of years before the podcast came out.
Mm-hmm.
And we've known each other since, I think, 2003. So, yeah, so it was an easy ask to try and get him to be my guinea pig.
Yep. Do you always get the songs you want?
No, there are reasons sometimes why you can't get a song. Most often because like the multi-tracks, the stems aren't available. Either because the session was lost to time, a lot of older songs can't be featured on the show because of that. And then sometimes it's just sometimes there are some artists who don't want to come on the show because they don't want to reveal their secrets like that.
Yeah. So you do think of them as secrets.
I guess so. Yeah, I think there's a lot going on under the surface. It's not that it's not a secret in that it's meant to be kept from people. It's a secret in that it's something that's normally hidden.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I mean, I want to get to the editing in a moment, and we'll play a clip from one of the things that just stunned me when I first heard it. But I did want to ask in a podcast landscape that's primarily personality driven, you actively choose to recede and take yourself out of the edit. So where does that choice come from?
I think that there's an intimacy that I wanted from Song Exploder, that people could have the experience when they listen to the show that it really feels like the artist sort of revealing something. If it is a secret, you know, that they're revealing something directly to the audience. And it's just about them and their music, and something about that felt special and felt like you wouldn't get it most places. And I don't have a background as an interviewer, and so rather than try and wedge myself in there and create this barrier, a filter between the listener's experience and what the artist was saying, like as if they had to go through me, I thought, mm-hmm. if I pull myself out, then it feels like, I thought it would be more special and it would feel more intimate.
Except you're quite present. It's just that your voice is not one that's one that's expressed through words. It's actually expressed in the editing and the composition of the podcast. So I want to play a clip, and this is the band Clipping, the sort of experimental hip-hop group from LA. And this is the song Work Work, and it's them explaining the first few moments of the song.
We started Clipping with the rules that we weren't allowed to use any drum sounds. We figure out how to make field recordings stand in for drums. So I'm using a bunch of different sounds made by sampling, tapping on this metal thermos. We recorded probably 128 different taps and sampled them and stuck them in a sampler instrument so that they could be played on a keyboard. And sort of painstakingly added little stutter effects. Then I added other layers. And then there's a sort of swell sound that happens every four bars, which is just a can of compressed air like you would use to clean the inside of your computer. We found a bunch of cinder blocks and broke them and recorded it. And we play it backwards and forwards. That's kind of our snare drum sound. Then the other element in the drum part of the beat is me like just mangling a beer can very, very close to microphones, which ends up making all these really harsh pops. And then with delay on them, they kind of become the hi-hat. So those are all of the sort of field recording elements of the percussion.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
It is.
That's amazing. Do you want to talk us through how you kind of piece together a segment like that?
Yeah. So the conversation that I had, so I did the episode in two parts. I talked to the two producers, Jonathan and Bill, in LA separately, and so they were talking about the beat and the music. I talked to David Diggs is the he's in Hamilton, and so I talked to him over the phone separately about the lyrics and the vocals. So for this part, and because these guys, they knew Song Exploder, they knew what it was about, and they are, you know, they are kind of the background, you know, David's the front man. I think they really were excited to talk about all these things. They have all these rules, and as you heard, their process is crazy. So this is a chance for them to talk about it. So what was maybe going to be an hour-long conversation, I think, was close to 2 hours. And so that section is pieced out of the explanation of all that stuff. Actually took about 20 minutes. And then you know, I sort of grabbed the parts that I thought could most succinctly deliver that, and then tried to time it with the music to make it feel like the music is being narrated. And so that also limits what I can put in there as well, because I'm like, I've got to squeeze it in these three bars. I have to explain the explanation of this part of the thermos.
Because you interview for hours and hours on end, don't you?
Yeah.
Which then ends up being these bite-sized podcasts. Mm-hmm. So it's really about just that first pass at the edit is an immense amount of work to get to distill these thoughts.
Yeah, the first part isn't so bad, because I'll take the interview and then I'll transcribe it. And so really I'm just reading, you know, what's about 30 pages of an interview, and then just going for the parts that are the most juicy, I guess, mm-hmm. that have the most, that are like the most information laden, and so I'm pulling those out, and that part's actually, so that the first part's not too bad, I'm just looking for those best parts, but then the harder part is figuring out how those come together and creating a structure out of them. Basically, like, I used to do this thing when I was little where I would, this is so weird, but I would go and, like, you know, collect a bunch of sticks. You know, like, I would have to clear the yard of sticks before mowing the lawn. And I would go, and I remember, like, the fun part of it was after getting all the sticks, I'd, like, take them all and, like, line them up by size, shorter to longer. And when I was getting ready to come talk to you, I was thinking about that's sort of like what I do in that step, is I've got all, you know, I've underlined my parts of the transcript, and those are all my little sticks, and then I try and figure out a way to, you know, arrange them and look at them individually.
Because in effect, you went to design school, graphic design school, as a degree, so and sound design, but are there any graphic design principles that feed this?
Well, I think my aesthetic as a designer is to be a minimalist, mm-hmm. and I think that probably plays into it. I don't know that it's from design, and maybe it's more like there's some other more deeply recessed instinct that feeds both of those things.
Some little sticks.
Yeah, exactly. clear all the little
sticks.
Twigs off. Yeah. So I think it's something that gets expressed in both visually and now I think a little bit in my music, and then especially in the show, just trying to reduce things to their most essential elements.
So one, you've had the chat, you've got 2 hours of tape, you've kind of figured out what the nuggets are. How do you know when to start? I mean, oftentimes, from what I've heard, the timeline of the chat doesn't necessarily replicate the timeline of the song when it happens. So are you looking for a narrative arc, an emotional arc? Are you looking for a rhythmic arc?
Yeah, I think I'm looking for all of those. And it sometimes it changes with what the song is and what the character of the story is and the personality of the person who I'm talking to. Well, so that's kind of fun. You know, it's not like it's just a formula that I get to plug in every time. The flavor of the episode changes based on the ingredients of the interviewee. So if they're giving me a lot of emotional stuff, then I am going to try and edit it based on emotional cues. And if it's very technical, then that's a different kind of exercise.
One of the, in our little pre-chats that we had, one of the little books that you tipped me off, well, not little, big book that you tipped me off to, that's been a huge influence on Song Exploder was The Conversations, which is in effect a conversation between Michael Ondaatje and Walter Murch, the film editor Walter Murch, who's done The Godfather, Apocalypse Now, as well as being a sound designer for The Conversation, the film. For any of you who know the book, what was the inspiration in really taking that book and seeing it as a seeded thought for Song Exploder?
I read that book initially just because I was a huge fan, I am a huge fan of Michael Ondaatje, mm-hmm. and I was just reading everything that he had made. And then I found out that he had done this book with Walter Murch. And so I didn't read it with the approach of trying to find inspiration from it, but just wanting to learn more about this author that I loved. And Walter Murch, The Conversation is one of my favorite movies, and I knew that this guy, Walter Murch, had done both the picture editing as well as the sound editing, and the sound editing in the movie is insane. And I think he was nominated for Oscars for both. Mm-hmm. So through the course of that book, they just talk about editing in this really large-scale way. Ondaatje talks about it in terms of his own experience as a writer, and Walter Murch talks about it in terms of sound design and pictures. But then they expand into all these other parts of it. And there's this one spread that they have in the middle of the book where it's Elizabeth Bishop's poem, One Art, and they have the very first draft of it on the left side of the page, and then on the right side is the final draft. And the first draft, there are all these notes and scribbled, you know, thoughts that she has. It's typewritten, but then she's crossed things out, and it's kind of a mess, but there's a lot of like beautiful ideas. She has like some ideas for titles at the top, and then on the second page, you know, it's a classic, beautiful, pristine poem. And you can see how the raw material on one side, you can see her work, you know, and you can recognize her fingerprints in the things that she's crossed out, and it's kind of a roadmap to this piece of creativity, and I thought that was so beautiful, and I thought Song Exploder could try and do the same kind of thing, but with music, and being in audio, there was a chance to sort of have a show and tell kind of format.
Yeah, show and tell's a huge part of it, and actually in some ways you really play to that, because there's a lot of musical concepts that a layperson that doesn't have a musical background might not know. I think in one of them, ostinato comes up, which is a pretty high musical concept. So that use of show and tell is really great, because as you're hearing an artist talk about a particular musical form, you can hear the actual what they're doing to it. So maybe on that note, I'll roll clip two. And this is the sound designer, the film score composer for The Martian.
I remember I used to get records out from the public library when I was a kid.
Oh, no, this isn't.
And whenever the record would end, I would just...
That's my bad. Can we roll three? Thanks.
And then the moon changes somewhat, brightens. We get to Watney, who's smiling. We hear a little harp thing with a bit of delay on it, which gives us a little spring in our step. I wanted it to be an organic played instrument. I wanted a texture. I didn't want it to be guitar. I didn't want it to be piano. And that kind of limited me. Harp seemed absolutely perfect. And then I'd stick a left-right delay on it. I wanted that feeling, like a mounting excitement.
I don't know if that's coming through the speakers, but when you listen to it in stereo as a podcast, you hear, well, first of all, you hear the delay happening as the harp sort of extends, and then you hear it coming out of left and right. How do you balance that in terms of geekery? You know, like, how do you not go completely into, your compositional head and sort of say, right, how do I make this for not just me and my mates, but a much broader audience?
Well, in The Conversation, I definitely do go, you know, all the way geeky. But, I mean, if I'm a musician, and hearing two musicians talk is one of the most annoying things you could possibly witness. And so for a non-musician, I can't imagine it would, you know, go somewhere between self-indulgent and unbearable. And so so I think by going that far, you know, I can get more out of them, and knowing that I can edit it later, I don't have to worry too much about it. And so a lot of times by asking those really geeky questions, you actually get something that's that is going to be applicable to a layperson and is actually a bigger idea, or something that might even be profound, even though it's born out of a really specific question about asking about a delay pedal or asking about whatever effects they might have used. And in the end, that's another advantage of me, you know, taking myself out of it. You can just be left with the good stuff, and all the husk is taken away.
And in that clip specifically, I mean, I quite like that because you get the emotional intelligence of the music coming through there as well. So you hear this composer, Harry Gregson-Williams, I should say, the film score composer for The Martian, which is the film with Matt Damon in it, talking about his emotional choices when scoring that music. So how do you then edit, Song Exploder? Because effectively what you're doing is you're taking these compartmentalized moments of these songs and trying to build an emotional trajectory through the 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's definitely the hardest part, is trying to figure out how to make an episode have a beginning, a middle, and an end. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times with the creation of a song, there isn't that kind of logic applied to it. There are parts that might be created and then abandoned, and then another idea will come, and then things get changed. So I try and think about it musically, I guess, like you might, if you were gonna witness the song being put together in some kind of linear logical order, how would it come together? So, you know, I can't talk about some musical element that plays off of the rhythm of, like, I can't talk about the drums if they play off the rhythm of the bass without first talking about the bass.
Sure.
And if you have to talk about the bass and it's not the bassist talking, then that person has to be introduced. So there it's a little bit of, you know, sometimes you start with a log here, and then you realize you have to put a piece here, but then you have to put a piece here. And so it's kind of, my process isn't linear, though I'm trying to figure out a linear way to through the story.
That feels a bit structured, but there's still a freedom in that. I mean, you're still making choices, even though you've kind of got different sets of variables that you're playing with.
Yeah, and the way that I edit the show is in chapters, or scenes is what I think of them.
Uh-huh.
So like that would be one scene, the harp scene in that episode. And sometimes I'll realize that actually if I just move a scene, you know, earlier or later, then that'll actually open up the possibility of understanding another idea. So I tend to do them kind of discreetly a little bit, and then figure out how one can lead into the other.
One of the lines that I picked up when I was doing my homework and I read the conversations was a really kind of beautiful idea where you sort of withhold pieces of information until you feel like they can have their most impact, I suppose. So the line is basically, trying to figure out where the audience is looking, and in this case, listening. So where's the next place they're going to listen? And then making that edit so that they head in that direction. So is there a resonance in that for you, trying to figure out what they're going to want to hear next? Because certainly there's, I forget which one it is, but one of the artists mentions a bit of tech called Voice Live. And I was like, what is Voice Live? And then the next thing you do is you tell me what Voice Live is. And it's just like, oh, right, perfect, you know?
Yeah, I feel like I only have two choices, which makes it easy for me. Either you can show first and then tell, or that you can tell and then you can show. And that it's just a matter of sometimes, you know, I don't like to put go from music to music because that can be a little bit confusing. And so sometimes, you know, if you end with a musical idea, then I'm going to come back by introducing a new idea with the interviewee talking about it, and then you'll hear it. So, but there is some kind of rhythm. I can't go too deep into the idea without you hearing it, because then it just becomes jargony or it becomes too abstract. I'm talking about music is so abstract, and I know we're talking about a podcast about music, so it's even one degree further. But in the show, I have a little more control, and I can try and make sure that there's as little time between introducing an idea and then the execution of that idea as possible.
How much are you guiding your artists in the conversations? Are you sort of saying, give me more tech, give me more emotion, give me more pizzazz? You know, like what is, how much of you are we not hearing in terms of your craftsmanship?
I mean, I think I am guiding them a lot, but not consciously and hopefully not overtly to them. It's really, that's about me being a good interviewer. And so a lot of times it's me trying to dig for the emotional idea behind a decision. Because it is easy to talk about just the mechanics of it, but a lot of times, like, the emotional underpinning is the reason why, and I think that's where it's more interesting. You know, I mean, to some people, of course, it's going to be interesting to know what piece of gear was used or what the fundamental technical underpinnings are. But I think for a broader audience, you need to know about the big idea, or sometimes really the small idea. But still, there needs to be an idea. There needs to be this sense of cause and effect. I felt this way and I wanted to say something about it, and so I made this, and then here's what it is, and then you do it again. Ideally, that's how it plays out.
Yeah. Have you ever been completely like agog by what someone said to you? Just completely just taken aback by their particular musical technique, writing style, approach to making?
Yeah, actually that clip that you have of the other one, the books, that one, that was mind-blowing. I mean, that was a song that I think had come out in 2005, and the Books are one of my favorite bands, and they're really, I remember reading an interview with them in a magazine called Tape Op, that's like a creative recording magazine that's great, but it's in print, so there's only so far you can go with understanding, you know, the cause and effect.
Talking about music.
Yeah, but I remember reading an interview and being blown away by their process, and anyway, the song is one that I'd known for a long time. I'd listened to it over and over and over again. And then when he told me how he actually made, you know, I have the stems, I know what I'm going to be talking about, but still when he told the actual story of how he made the rhythm track, it blew my mind.
I remember I used to get records out from the public library when I was a kid, and whenever the record would end, I would just wait for that sound because I loved it so much. That kind of little thump as it crossed over where the spiral turns into a circle. Yeah, that circle at the center of a record is a loop, and so it was a major epiphany when I realized that, oh, that's a blank canvas right there. I scratch records. I mean, actually physically scratching records with, like, razor blades and pens and pencils and thumbtacks and things like that. And usually not across the music part, but across the locked groove at the center of the record. You know, if the music part is this long spiral that carries the needle inwards, when that spiral finally ends, it ends in a circle. So if you use a protractor, you can measure out any time signature you want right into that groove. And, you know, you have 360 degrees in a circle. So if you take 60 degrees, you know, that will give you 6 beats, which is, you know, could be a 6-8 or a 3-4 or whatever. It's simple geometry. I mean, that's all rhythm is. But there's a chaos to it as well, which I really love, because when you're actually cutting into vinyl, you have no real control over what you're doing. You can just sort of like, well, I wonder what this is going to do.
Well, you're not using the inside of your records as like a blank canvas. Yeah. For...
I'm so gratified by that laugh that got, because that's one where, so he said that, he was talking about it, and I thought that the process was fascinating. But then he had that line, it's simple geometry, that's all rhythm is. And that struck me as so profound. I mean, I'm a drummer, and the idea of thinking of 3-4 time and 4-4 time as like a physical shape, as a two-dimensional shape, that's repeatable, I don't know, it was like a brain teaser to me, and I really loved it, and I wanted to score that moment with what he was talking about, so people, you know, you can understand what the sound is that he's creating. But I also wanted to highlight that moment because I felt like that had, I wanted people to feel the same impact that I did. So in that moment in the edit, I don't know if you notice, the music goes away, and then it's just him. He just says that. It's, you know, comes at a natural place in the beat, but it drops out. He says it, and then the music starts again, and it was great. You guys timed it perfectly. Your laugh.
Do you, I mean, I've heard silence used quite sparingly, but actually quite powerfully in the podcasts I've heard. So is there, do you think silence is one of your tools?
Yes, but that's something that I've learned as I've gone along. I think in the, especially in the first several episodes, I like edited so mercilessly that like it's incredibly dense, that it's just information, you know, with music and I realized at some point that, like now it's hard for me to go back to, and listen to some of those because, while like I like all the things that are in it, I actually wish there were more silences so that the listener has time to like absorb some of those ideas. And so now that's something that I've started to understand a little bit more in the last year or so, is using silence to punctuate things and to give people a chance to take in, you know, sometimes heady and abstract musical ideas and sometimes emotional ones that you just have to like marinate in it for a second before moving on to the next thing.
Would you redo those podcasts?
Oh yeah. I mean, I can't listen to any of them without whatever one I put out last. As soon as I listen to it the next time, I'm like, oh, should have changed that. you know, things that I could have done better.
When you spoke with Courtney Barnett, our very own Courtney Barnett, about Depressed, and she has this great line where she says, "There's no rules in songwriting," which, you know, I imagine there'd be an entire army of musicians that would disagree with that. So where do you sit on that particular debate?
I'm definitely in the no rules camp, and I think that that's one of the unwritten theses of Song Exploder, is that there are no rules, and here's a way for everybody to recognize that if all of these are, you know, songs that are successful in some way, but there are all these unique paths to get to them, then clearly there's no rules, because if there were, then every episode would be exactly the same.
Yeah. You know, for your Australian audience, how was that? Was there any kind of cultural, jarring, or did you know? Because Depressed, and for us certainly in Melbourne, we know what that is. You know, there's a whole sort of culture around it that resonates really strongly with us. But did that translate for you?
I think so. I think in the part that you don't hear in that episode is me trying to sort of like get a sense from her of the geography and the cultural geography.
Yeah.
She was able to sum it up in, you know, just a couple lines, but yeah, I needed to understand that. But my favorite part was, and when we got to Melbourne this time and I got to look on the map, I got to actually see, oh, there's Preston. And then my favorite part in that episode is, not to give away too much if you haven't heard it, but sure, I'm going to give away. It's my favorite part of the thing. at the end of the, you know, the song is about her looking for a house in Preston. That's sort of the seed of it. And then she's talking all about this house in this suburb, Preston, and it's called Depreston. And it's this beautifully rendered story. But at the end of the episode, she told me that she didn't tell me at the end of the episode, but it happens at the end of the episode. She reveals that she was talking to her girlfriend and playing her the song, and her girlfriend corrected her that the whole plot of the story, the house that they were looking at, wasn't even in Preston. It was in Coburg. And so I got to look on the map when I got here, and I was like, oh, there's Preston, and there's Coburg. And, I can see how she made make the mistake.
There's one final clip I want to play, and this is, well, I should say, in terms of like wild ways of approaching how to make music, one of the, as far as I can tell, notorious reveals that Song Exploder has found is that Weezer Rivers Cuomo actually writes his song lyrics from an Excel spreadsheet that is was that a, I'm sorry, did I just notice that that he organizes by syllables. So I'll let you guys listen to that on your own time. But I wanted to track forward to a next part in that particular Weezer podcast where they explode a song called Summer Elaine and Drunk Dory, and the names behind, the stories behind those names are good enough. And it's just about making, it's just that little final touch, and this is kind of what you tapped into earlier, that there is so much work that's put into these podcasts, these songs, and that you could never possibly get to the bottom of every single thought that's gone into one of them. And that this particular clip from Weezer to me suggests like that final moment where you just do something wild to make the song come alive.
Jake has worked with each of the four guys separately, recording their parts, really crafting them so they all interlock just perfectly, and it's all very carefully thought through. And what we have is a pretty great recording. What it is lacking is that feeling of spontaneity and background chatter and just off-the-cuff ideas that you get when you have four guys jamming in a room. So we do at least a few takes where it's me, Scott, and Brian all standing around a mic or several mics, and we just do a couple passes through the song where, you know, you can do whatever you want. Crazy sounds, hip-hop ad-libbing,
Witch.
Of course, harmonies, anything that comes to your mind. And we end up with many tracks of all this crazy stuff. I gotta admit, Brian's pretty awesome with these freaky ad libs.
Ah, here
Come
we go.
Back to me.
If somebody asked me what the song was about, I would say I'm trying to write songs that I don't understand. So if I could answer that question and tell you what it was about, then I failed as a songwriter. I want to enjoy my own songs, and once I feel like I totally understand a song and there's no mystery there, then I can't really enjoy it anymore. So I like to create these enigmatic 3-minute adventures that have me scratching my head for years.
Is there any element of that in Song Exploder? Because to me, I'm just like left wanting more, you know? At the end of every episode, I'm like, well, wait a minute, I want to know about, you know, the bridge, the refrain, the pre-chorus, the, you know, all of this sort of stuff that just can't be contained in 20 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I think I sometimes get a complaint on Twitter, you know, or an email that says the episodes are too short. And I'm completely fine with that criticism because it's one of the things where people don't know what I'm cutting out. People don't know that if it, and I think that if it were, if an episode instead of being 15 minutes was 35 minutes, it'd be a lot harder to get people to listen to it in the first place. And so the feeling of leaving somebody wanting more is probably the best thing that I could aim for. I'd rather that than feel like you've gotten more than just the best parts.
Yeah. Yep. So can we do like a rapid fire gossip session?
Okay.
I promise not to breach any trusts.
Okay.
Your bucket list, not that gossipy. I mean, I know Bjork and you two were on there.
Yeah.
So who's up next?
I mean, I could do wish lists all day.
I know, but give me your top three.
Top three. I'll say Kanye.
Mm-hmm.
Because that would be great. I mean, just to put a mic in front of him, that would be great. But he is also one of my favorite producers, in addition to being a crazy person. I think Portishead has always been, I don't know if that would be possible, but that would be amazing. They're a big inspiration to me, especially in terms of the production. And Radiohead would be an easy thing to wish for. Least. Not an easy one to get.
Walk in the park. nightmare artists?
Not anyone in particular. I think it's just the hardest episodes are ones where they don't understand what the point of the show is necessarily, if they haven't heard the show, or if they think of it as, I guess, like in a traditional interview, a lot of times musicians are asked to reveal some of the big ideas and the sort of like capital B, capital I big ideas. And that ends up leading them to speak in sort of grand statements and like platitudes. And that's really antithetical to the show. So a lot of times I have to, not a lot of times, sometimes I have to kind of dig at that a little bit and try and get them to talk about things in a much smaller, more granular way. The platitudes aren't going to make for an interesting podcast, because you can get those. And maybe there might be one big idea that feels thematically important to the song, but really the things that make it interesting are the, you know, I was eating this for breakfast and that led to this thought and then I wrote this thing. So that's the hardest part. But I don't think there's anybody who makes music that I couldn't get, you know, that out of them. So no,
that's
nightmare.
Very
artists.
Diplomatic of you. biggest scoop
that I've gotten so far.
Yeah.
I think U2 was probably the biggest scoop, because I didn't even ask them to be on the show. They wrote, their publicist wrote to me.
Right.
And that was, I couldn't believe that. So I don't get to claim any credit for that really, but that'll be the biggest scoop, I think.
And what's the secret to a hit song?
There is no one secret.
Cool. So I'm going to actually, at the end of, we're going to go to questions now for about 10, 15 minutes, but then I'm going to come back because I will do my best to explode the 1 AM radio,
okay,
which is the song name, the artist name that Rishikesh goes under. So we'll have about 10, 15 minutes of questions, and then hang back because we're going to put this guy in the spotlight more in addition to. So does anyone have any questions?
To an episode of Here's a Thing with Alec Baldwin, he was speaking to Jimmy Fallon. And during that discussion, the sort of tension came up between like the old school format of late night versus this kind of modern need to create like streaming and moments that can be shared and go viral. And I can't help but see a similar tension between kind of like the old school radio format, which podcasting is grounded in, and kind of the new world. I can't help but feel that, like, personally, as a big consumer of podcasts, that the technology lets us down a lot, that it's all quite simple, it's kind of linear, that whereas, like, musicians have access to all this great ability to create field recordings and music out of, like, you know, spoons tapping, like, on thermoses, that you as a podcaster are kind of limited in your ability to kind of, like, present things to the audience in little segments. I'm just wondering if you find, if you get frustrated with kind of, like, your inability to, say, grab small segments out to be able to highlight clips, if you find things like the podcasting apps out there kind of limited, and if there are ways that you work past that frustration, or if there are any sort of like key features that you'd love to see perhaps in like a new generation of podcasting apps.
You mean in terms of trying to make something go viral?
Yeah, like I constantly find little segments that I'd love to be able to highlight and pop on Facebook or send to a friend, but that seems like, you know, really quite difficult, except say on SoundCloud, like most of the other podcasting apps make that kind of quite difficult.
Yeah, it is pretty hard. There's definitely a limitation to the technology, I agree. I think I recently saw one that somebody had highlighted a clip from a West Wing podcast and had posted it, just a little thing, and it looked like it was pretty cool. So I think the one good thing is I think that a lot of people share that frustration, and so I think it's a problem that will be addressed more broadly soon.
Has learning about how all these songwriters compose their songs influenced your own songwriting at all?
It has, I think, in a large scale way. I mean, there's too many different techniques that I learn about to be able to try all of them myself. But one thing that I think has helped me a lot was learning this idea. I think I understood it at some level, you know, that there are no rules in songwriting is not a difficult thing to grasp, but it's been hammered into me by doing this podcast, by seeing how differently every single person approaches making music. And there's some music that's, like I said, like the books episode, there have been some songs that I have lived with for decades or years, and to realize how not haphazardly, but just how circuitously some of those pieces were made, it really has freed up my own sense of perfectionism. I think I can be a little bit of a perfectionist about everything, the podcast, about my, and certainly about my own music. And so it's given me a chance to kind of let go of some of that and be a little less precious about how that stuff is made. And that's been a valuable lesson for me to learn.
How far back would you be prepared to go to you know, like Gershwin or, you know, things like that? How far back would you go to deconstruct?
I would go as far back as someone is alive to, you know, talk to me about. The one thing that is important to me, sometimes I've been asked, you know, would you do a piece of classical music? But the thing is that I only want to talk to the people who are involved in the creation of the piece. And so so that limits things because, I'm not interested in talking to, like, expert music analysts or critics. I really just want to hear it from the source directly, so that limits things.
I'm constantly surprised by, like, when I see a song on your podcast and I think, oh, that's the song by that artist that I really have been interested in for a long time. And I guess I just want to know, is that a dialogue that you start with them, or do you approach them with an idea, or do you just throw it open?
Yeah, I the first thing is really just trying to get somebody to be on the show, and then we try and figure out the song. But sometimes I do start that process off by saying, I really love this song. I think it sounds like there could be a good story in here. There are certainly musical ideas that I think would be interesting, or there are sounds that are tickling my brain, and I want to find out more about them. So sometimes I'll start that way. It doesn't always work out. Sometimes they'll say, oh, we really want to talk about this song, or they might know there's a better story here. Sometimes there are things like record labels that get involved and they say, "And we really want to push our single." So it's a compromise between all those things.
I actually have a question about your West Wing Weekly podcast.
Okay.
Who would be your dream guest and for which episode?
I'd love to have Aaron Sorkin on every single episode because I feel like half the time it's for the same reason as the answer earlier, it's a lot of times I want to ask questions about directly to the author about what was meant by this line or this scene. And so he's frequently the person I want to talk to the most. Ideally, it would just be a Song Exploder style monologue of him explaining every single part of every single episode, and I wouldn't have to talk.
Is that how you move through the universe now?
What's that?
That everything should just be a Song Exploder kind?
Yes.
Hi, I just wanted to ask you about interviewing. Obviously, like, quite often you talk to artists who it's quite personal what the song is about, and it's just like, how do you kind of negotiate, like, asking people to give away, like, a very personal thing that they've chosen to express through a song, not through, like, obvious kind of storytelling?
I tend to dance around it as much as possible because it is hard to get somebody to open up in that way. So that's part of the reason, too, why even though there's only about 15 minutes of podcast, the conversation might go for an hour and a half. That's because I've gone for about 70 minutes of kind of softening them up for that for that last reveal. And part of that process of softening them up is asking them procedural questions. Those are a little bit, they might not be easy questions to answer because the process might be difficult to explain, but they are factual. You know, they aren't the softer, gooier questions. But after we've done that and they've gotten a sense of that they can trust me, maybe because I'm not an idiot. I've proved that I'm not an idiot. I've proved that I know a little bit about their song. I've done some research, and I'm talking to them with a level of understanding. Then sometimes I can try and go for the question about, and you know, if we're talking about, like, the vocal sound, for example, and I'll isolate just a single lyric and talk to them about how they happen to sing a part of it. After they've talked about that and we're, like, comfortable swimming in those waters, I might say, and what does that line mean? And again, it's easier to talk about the smaller ideas. What does this one sentence mean? Than what is the entire thing? All the verses, all the choruses, the bridge, you know, this collection of 30 lyrics as a whole, that's a big idea. But the small idea of tell me about these 8 words, that's something that's a little bit easier to communicate, and a lot of times that'll actually lead to something, that'll open up to something bigger and more profound.
So are you always picking songs that are they relate really personally to you, or do you have to do your research sometimes before you approach the artist that you're planning to do for the episode?
No, my research tends to start really once the song is chosen, not necessarily so much with the song choice itself. Although sometimes, you know, if I don't know if the sky's the limit, I might pick, okay, what's your biggest hit? I actually usually say in an email, if they're having trouble figuring out which song they want to feature, I'll say, tell me about the song that fits within the Venn diagram of your most popular songs and also the ones that have the most personal significance to you. Wherever those two can overlap, then that's usually going to make for the best episode, because that might be one that a lot of people have heard and will be excited to hear about. And then it's also one that where there'll be some richness, some depth to the story as well.
So we're going to take two more questions before we explode the 1 AM radio.
Has an artist ever acted or reacted negatively to how you've edited their story? And if not negatively, then in a way that was unexpected to you?
If they have, thankfully I have not heard about it. No, mostly it's been really lovely. Like, people have been really nice about it and helped me book their friends, and it's been great.
Final question.
Hi, I had a question. We talk a lot about the artist's influence in the whole mix, no pun intended, but the creators of the overall sound of the song, like your Chris Lord Elgers and your Serb Engineers, the people who actually create the overall tone of the song, how much creative influence do they have in this whole podcast, and do you ever get to talk to these kinds of people?
I do talk to them sometimes, and it tends to be a combination of when I have access to them, but also when it relates directly to something that's come up in the musician's interview. So there are definitely times where a producer or an engineer has really helped craft the fabric of the song, you know, where a sonic idea becomes part of the actual text itself. And so in cases like that, then I usually ask if I can try and arrange an interview with the producer or the engineer. And so they've been on there sometimes. Dave Fridman was on for the Spoon episode for a song that he produced. And, you know, a band like Garbage, Shirley Manson was on, but also Butch Vig, who also is a great producer. So I try and mix them in as much as possible. But really, I never start with them. I usually start with the musician and then see where that relates. For the case of like Carly Rae Jepsen, the producer was a huge part of the actual final product. So I talked to him for really as long. I had an hour long interview with him as well.
So we're just going to play one sample, one stem from the 1 AM radio track, Everything Falls Apart. But before we get into that, working as a composer, working as the 1 AM radio, is it a vastly different proposition from sitting in front of your screen as a song exploder?
It isn't. I think just because I don't know how to do it differently. Like, the process of making the podcast came out of the process of me making music. It came out of me already having these tools. You know, I had a microphone. I had the microphone that I used to sing on my records, that's the same microphone that I use on every single interview and every single episode. And so Pro Tools is something that I use to make music on, and then I'm doing the same thing with the podcast. So it doesn't feel like a different part, but it's also partly maybe born out of my own ignorance. I don't know how to tell a story except, you know, through the lens of music, I guess. So that's just been the compass that I've followed.
Someone level, that's a pretty good storytelling vehicle.
But I think that the other thing is that you know, since this is about editing, really, that has been something that's been fundamental to both. I don't think that I'm a natural interviewer or storyteller. It's something that I've had to, you know, part of the reason why I format the show the way that I do is to sort of alleviate some of those weaknesses that I have. not having a background as an interviewer. But and similarly, I don't feel like I'm like a natural songwriter. I feel like the music that I make is a bit more of like a product of design. It's something that comes out of a lot of editing, you know, and I do as much work editing music as I do like actually recording it. So they feel similar in that way.
So will you set up this stem for us? What are we going to hear?
Yeah, so this is a part of one of my songs where I feel like that idea of editing comes through the most. It's a song that I'd recorded, you know, I think 6 or 8 vocal tracks, a bunch of harmonies. There's not a lot going on in the song, but there's a really dense vocal part. And then in the bridge of the song, that's what I used. That was sort of the raw material that I used for the music. And so without recording anything else, I just kind of cut together this rhythmic stuttering thing out of my own vocals. And so that became kind of like the hook of the song. So that's just the vocal part, but it makes more sense in the context of the song. but it is like me sort of slicing little pieces together, and it feels akin to the process of making the podcast.
So we're going to play this. We've run out of time, so I'm going to play this song. You can hear Everything Falls Apart as we roll out of here. So, Jumbo, if you want to start that for us, and would you please thank my fantastic guest, Hrishikesh Roy.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Wheeler Center podcast. Don't forget to visit wheelercenter.com for the best in books, writing, and ideas from Melbourne, Australia, and the world.